Hey everybody, welcome to Hammer Down on the Market Scale Network. I'm your host, Mike Bush. Excited today because there are certain people in supply chain that, you know, you get to know online. Social media is what it is. You get to know people, you get to meet them a little bit, you kind of have a feel for how they are. And then sometimes you go to a conference or you host a podcast and you run into them and you feel like old friends right off the bat. And today's guest falls into that bucket for me. She is Sarah Dandan, founder of 411. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Mike. Yeah, I think we met on, well, what was then Twitter, Freight Twitter, and we talked a couple of times and we got to know each other. And so it's nice to kind of, you know, now meet you. And it's great being here. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure, Sarah. And you're totally right. I think it was Twitter or FreightX or whatever we want to call it. And I think you had posted something like, demurrage is dumb. And I thought, that's my person. So let's hop right into it, Sarah. Tell me about 411.
So what we do is we help people manage their disputes. Usually when it comes to demurrage and detention, it's our primary focus, working with BCOs, forwarders, and NVOs, and drayage providers. As I said, it's our primary focus, but we do help people out with other things if needed. You know, for instance, if you've got somebody holding your shipment hostage for whatever reason, or in one case, we've got somebody who signed up to ship something with somebody, and it's been 7 months, and the stuff never even left the warehouse. So we kind of just advocate for people. You know, that's how I look at it. That's how I like to think about it. We're advocates and knowledgeable, very knowledgeable advocates. But our primary focus is demurrage and detention. And we also do auditing. But as I've mentioned before, people kind of are like, oh, that's nice. Oh, you do that? Okay, great. Well, so anyway, we've got these demurrage and detention bills. And so that's why, you know, our focus kind of shifted to that.
All right, so let's baseline this. Start with a definition. What is demurrage?
So basically, when you bring in a container and it arrives at the port, there's a clock that starts, and you get free days. It can be anywhere, I don't know, probably usually around 3 to 4 days. And that means you better get your trucker in to pull your container out because they need space. If you don't pull your container out in time, demurrage is assessed. The purpose of demurrage is to incentivize the movement of cargo so that people don't treat ports and their yards as storage units, which, you know, some BCOs, the very, very large ones, do have a habit of doing. You know, and those charges in those cases are absolutely legitimate. The problem comes when the charges are misapplied and aren't legitimate, which happens far too often, to the tune, I'd say, of hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars. So if you don't get your container out in time, you are charged demurrage. Now, the FMC has stated that there are instances when you should not be charged demurrage. And that could be anything from there were no appointments available for your trucker to go in. There were dual transaction requirements at the port. There were no empty container returns allowed. It was a holiday. It was a weekend. Basically, if it's something outside of your control, you aren't supposed to be charged demurrage. However, as I said before, it makes the carriers a lot of money. I don't know. I don't think it's, you know, necessarily born out of malice, like, let's, you know, break the rules and charge people all this money. I think it's more like a, hey, if we send out the bill and they pay it, then, you know, we get the money anyway. So that's not necessarily a bad thing. Detention's kind of like the opposite. So if you have your container and you've picked it up and you're supposed to return it and you don't, the carrier will then charge you like a detention fee. Again, that's a daily fee, like with demurrage. You know, and that's, again, meant to incentivize people to bring the carrier stuff back. But unfortunately, as we saw, especially during COVID, you couldn't always do that, right? Because you couldn't always get the truck in to return it, or there were dual transaction requirements, which are basically the carrier saying, if you bring a container in, you have to take a container out. So if a shipper isn't exporting, how are they going to do that, right? So then you kind of just have to wait until there's no dual transaction requirement to return it. Meanwhile, they're charging you for this every day. Now, you can't do anything. It's not your fault. You shouldn't be assessed those fees, but it happens.
Okay.
So that's detention.
Got it. So we've got two different fees. One of them is you have X amount of time to get your container out of the port. And if you don't do it by then, you're going to be charged. And then the second one is you have X number of days to get your container back into the port. And if it's not there, you're going to be charged. And both of those charges are coming from the steamship lines, the giant vessel owning companies. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. Okay. The carriers assess the fees. And what we saw happening a lot was, which recently changed, the poor truckers who went to go pick this up for people who had no contractual relationship with anybody except for, the shipper, they were handing them the bills and say, you can't pick it up or here's the invoice for it. You have to pay it. And, the truckers were like, why? We have nothing to do with this. Well, if you don't, you can't pick things up at this terminal anymore.
Got it.
So that was a huge, huge problem, which just got addressed with the new final rule that the FMC released, which everybody is very, very happy to see. And you're in the trucking space. I know you know how excited everybody was.
Yeah, absolutely. Although, yes, long story short, we were happy about it. We don't encounter demurrage very often. Less than one out of every 1,000 containers we move goes through demurrage, which was kind of a terrific number to find. One of those things that I heard it and it could immediately put it in my sales deck because I was really excited about it.
Yeah, that's really
good. Talk about a value prop. I know there are other folks out there that say, oh, our customers don't pay demurrage. Our customers really don't pay demurrage. So let's talk about where these fees are coming from. We've got the definition of why they're there, but how... So if we need an auditor, if we need somebody coming from the outside to say, hey, that one's valid, that one's not, is this a failure of technology? Is this a failure of this is the way we've always done it? Is there some malicious intent to pad the statistics? Why does 411 exist as opposed to somebody saying, oh, you got to get that container in 3 days and, we'll see it go through the turnstile and know it's out there?
Good questions. As I said, I don't think it's necessarily born out of any malice towards shippers. I think it's just one of those things that makes them money. And if you make billions of dollars, from something, what's kind of your impetus to change it, right? Not a lot, if you could just, we know it's probably not valid and wrong, but, we're just not going to say anything. If they pay it, okay, great. Don't forget, these are huge organizations too. And there's sometimes a disconnect between, their systems and the people and all that. So, I mean, I don't want it to seem like I'm saying the carriers are, it's just always a money grab or anything like that. Cause I don't necessarily think that, but I do think that they're more than happy to let it, continue. Now how does kind of technology fit into this? I think technology is useful for knowing where your container is, but if you can't get it out, you can't get it out, and technology isn't going to help you with that, right? Like, I can stare at the computer screen all day or my visibility platform and see my container sitting at the port or, see that it hasn't been returned or whatever, and how does that help me on a practical level? It really doesn't, right? What we see is a lot of the time it's something that's out of the shipper's control. Like, the trucker can't get an appointment. Let's say they open up 1,500 appointments in the morning, right? And you know this, there are automated booking systems now. So 10 companies might scoop up all of those appointments sometimes by, 9:05 a.m. or whatever it is after they open it. And then your trucker can't get in for the rest of the day to return the container. Like, what are you supposed to do in that situation? You can't do anything but wait until they can bring it back in and, in the inverse, when it's demurrage, if your trucker can't get in to pull it, what options do you have? In those cases, it's misapplied because it's not incentivizing the movement of freight. And does technology help you in that situation? No, it just helps you, again, know where it is. Why do we exist? We exist because it's a complex system. There are lots of laws and regulations that, go into, I guess, fighting something like this. And I've touched on this in previous conversations. Usually when it gets to a certain level, you're dealing with attorneys for the carriers. And even when you're not dealing with the carrier, if you're dealing with the FMC, the FMC is almost all attorneys at a certain level, and that's who you're appealing to. So you're in this arena, right, where you better know what you're talking about, you better know what you're doing in order to be able to kind of fight these charges. And so that's where we come in, because, we know the laws and we know the regulations and we study the cases, and we're fully capable of going toe-to-toe with the carrier attorneys and, dealing with the FMC. So it's not as, easy as it seems, I guess, maybe, because there are mechanisms for you to do this on your own. You don't always have to have an attorney. And, that's part of the reason why I do what I do. A lot of people can't afford $600 an hour, $500 an hour to fight a $3,000 bill, right? But you've got enough $3,000 bills, a $3,000 bill here, a $6,000 bill here, a $1,000 bill here. That adds up, especially if you're a small business. Who's advocating for these people? Who's, offering to help them in a practical way? There's not a lot of people capable of it. And so I'm very proud of the fact that we're able to do that. And that's one of, my missions is helping.
Sarah, how are you perceived by the carriers? When you get in touch with somebody at Maersk or somebody at CMACGM or somebody at, one of the smaller steamship lines, is it an eye roll of, oh man, it's Sarah again? Or, is it more partnership oriented where you're kind of able to say, hey, listen, guys, we just want to clear up some stuff that probably shouldn't have been built?
The thing is, the FMC who probably more rolls their eyes, like they probably take turns, like, oh, who's going to answer her this time? It's your turn today. but that's because I do a lot of background kind of like advocacy work that I don't really like talk about. So I'm constantly emailing them, asking them to define things and, what about this? What about that? And I'm sure they love it. But the carriers, it's usually kind of, honestly, it's a little bit like, okay, condescending, like, okay. Like, honey, you can talk. But then once they realize I know my stuff, their attitude changes. Once I've proven I know what I'm talking about and I do know all the regulations and I can cite them, and I'm not just playing,
right,
I guess, at this, that I am a kind of equal and worthy adversary, we'll put it that way.
Got it. So okay, demurrage and detention are pretty standard across the industry. There's lots of issues, and I know we talked about appointment systems, and for folks that are listening or are watching and haven't heard of the appointment system, let me give a quick overview here. So I'm going to use LA Long Beach as an example, where you've got 13 or 14 terminals, about 10 different appointment systems. So, and when Sarah said dual transactions, there's a requirement in the port that if you're going to get a container out, you have to bring an empty in. Earlier, we mentioned, look, if you're an importer but don't have any exports, you might rely on the trucking company to find an empty to go return it to. And then there's the appointment system, which is a little weird in that if I make an appointment at one terminal to bring an empty in, and then an appointment at another terminal to get a container out, it's possible that first terminal is running a little bit too late or a little bit behind, in which case I miss my second appointment, I can't get that container. And that's where Sarah comes in to say, hey, that's not fair. Is that pretty close?
Yeah, pretty close. And, then I say, this is why it's not fair. And here's why in the regulations and the rules that you should refund this, et cetera, et cetera. It's odd to me that what hill people sometimes choose, I guess. I've had carriers fight with us over $2,000 for months. Then I've had others for much larger bills just say, okay, like you're right. But that same carrier might then again want to argue for weeks about $1,000. There's one carrier we went to once where we had screenshots for every single day that the my client was assessed demurrage, showing that the container can be pulled out of the port. Literal screenshots, and oh well, okay, well we're still not going to refund it. Like, are
Got
you serious? So now we have to go to the FMC and we have to file against you because you're being stubborn. Like I don't understand it, but I mean, they can run their businesses how they want to. But I think that goes back also to kind of technology, right? And how you can have this proof and you can have these screenshots or whatever you're using. And it doesn't matter if the carrier just says, basically their attitude is like, what are you going to do about it? Go to the FMC? Well, yeah, if it's me, I am. And I think they're just used to shippers dropping it a lot because it's daunting. It is like, who wants to go toe to toe with like a Department of Attorneys,
Right.
and take it to the FMC, or and who wants to incur those costs?
So, Sarah, how did you get into this? I know you mentioned you were a freight forwarder for years. How did you fall into freight forwarding? How did you fall into the movement of goods and supply chain, et cetera?
Well, my dad was a freight forwarder, and he had his own company, and so we'd always like go hang out in his office when we were in high school and everything like that. And then when I graduated from college, he's like, well, I've been doing this a long time. Why don't you come work for me? So we could kind of semi-retire. We had a couple of like very big name clients. And this was kind of like still, I'm all people still use AS400, but like people were just starting to kind of like use email all the time and everything. And we had a bunch of customers that still wanted to use fax machines. And so I worked with him and obviously like learned a lot and basically ended up running it. Then I went to, I'm not going to name who it was, but a very large 3PL, everybody knows their name. And I did internal auditing there before I joined a team for they had a Fortune 50 client, and it was a very small team, and we did all of the shipping for them like around the world. I was also a so I was certified in export compliance. So I had to take a very rigorous, I guess, examination of the Export Administration Regulations, ITAR, OFAC, all that. I really learned how to, read a new language, which was the law and regulations. I mean, and that stuff was that my binders. I mean, I had several binders that were like 6 inches thick. And had to learn, to be able to kind of process that language and apply my knowledge in like kind of like nuanced everyday situations. And that if I had known that would kind of like lead to me doing what I'm doing now, I would have been like, huh? And I've always been one of those people who like I got charged, for something. I'll go through their terms and conditions and I'll just pick it apart, send off my like report and get my refund. So I think it was kind of, people, I would help people with the like demurrage and detention disputes because I, as part of my consulting. And it just kind of after COVID, more and more people started asking me for help. Like, can you help me kind of like write a letter or, what could I reference here? What could I do there? And I learned that there were a lot more shippers out there hurting than I thought there were, and that a lot of them were kind of being ignored because their cases kind of fell into the attorneys didn't want to deal with it because it wasn't big enough for them. Which I understand, right? Again, it's their businesses. They're going to run them how they want to. I mean, I get attorneys who refer people to me. I love them. Thank you very much for doing that. Keep doing it. But there was this, and the other people, I guess, who do this are always pursuing kind of the bigger, flashier names and huge numbers. And I'm like, well, little numbers add up, right? And these people need an advocate, and I love fighting for the underdog. And so it was kind of like a natural fit. Like, how can I take my ability to process these laws, regulations, and rules and be able to kind of then put it, you know, to paper? And that's how it started. And I'm so glad for it because I love it.
Sarah, one thing we touched on a little while ago was the FMC changing the rules and, you know, making it so that truckers aren't necessarily going to be responsible for fees like demurrage or detention. But, you know, are there any other outcomes? Is there anything else truckers should be aware of? Anything else shippers should be aware of?
This is something a lot of people don't know, but there's no mechanism in the Shipping Act or anywhere else that requires a carrier to share with a shipper information as to whether there were on a particular day dual transaction requirements, empty container restrictions, whether or not there were appointments available at a certain time. So like a carrier, let's say, will go to the FMC and say, we had 1,500 appointments available that day, but they don't tell them then when the appointments were filled. And I've asked the people, I said, did they tell you when they were filled? No. I said, so they could have been filled at 9:15 a.m., which is, you know, mostly the case. So if you've got, let's say, a $10,000 demurrage and detention bill and you want to dispute it and you go to the carrier and you say, I want to dispute this. Will you tell me if on these days, like, you know, you had these restrictions or appointments were available, blah, blah, blah. The carriers don't have to tell you squat. And they'll tell you that. I mean, I've got tons of letters from their attorneys saying, well, there's nothing that compels us to share this information, so we're not going to. But freight forwarders are required to share every aspect of a shipment with their principal. But the people who are kind of breaking the rules are allowed to hold on to that information, and they don't have to share it. How much easier would it be if you could just go to the carrier and say, can you just give me this information? And they have it. They have it. They just don't want to share it because it will lead to them having to refund a whole bunch of these fees. And I think it's just like a, I don't know if it's like a misstep or a blind spot of the FMC that there is no mechanism for this. But now, especially with the new rules, if you're a shipper, you have to rely on your trucker to provide you now with proof of something if you want to fight it. Because there is nothing that says like, hey, like, why don't you tell me, you know, multi-billion-dollar carrier, and multi-billion-dollar carrier just goes, you know, the only mechanism is discovery in a lawsuit. And I know this for a fact because I went to the OIG of the FMC for a legal opinion on this. And that's what they told me. They said the only mechanism is discovery in a lawsuit. That to me is insane. That like the people breaking the rules in this case aren't required to then provide you with this information as regulated entities, because let's not forget, they're licensed, they're regulated just like everybody else. But if you're a freight forwarder and your customer comes and says, I want every single like invoice, I want blah, 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 you have to provide that to them. And it's in the law. So we're in a position now with the new rules, especially where, and I don't see how this gets solved easily, where kind of everybody's punting off the responsibility to the trucking community now. Because if the trucking community doesn't help the shippers are, for lack of a better word, you know, screwed.
So Sarah, first question, one thing we ask every guest that is here on the show is, if you were talking to somebody who is considering a career in supply chain, considering logistics as a path, what advice would you give them?
Oh, man, that's a good one. Strap in. I mean, one of the reasons why I love it is I think one of the reasons why a lot of people don't love it. I mean, there's always a fire to put out, right? Constantly. It's like, okay, I can breathe now. No, it's something else. But if you're a natural problem solver, you're going to absolutely love it. And I think that's why supply chain attracts certain personalities. We'll put it that way. So I think my advice would be to, you know, realize that when you're working, but when you're done working, that's it. I think it's a big problem in our community. Not necessarily like the hustle culture, but it leans a little bit on the toxic side, I think, where people just don't learn to like disengage And it can be easy not to when it's such a high stress environment all the time. So my advice would be to learn to disengage and learn to disengage early, because your heart will thank you for it many years down the line.
I understand entirely. So, Sarah, if our listeners want to reach out, get in touch with you, either for career advice or because maybe they're looking at a bill they don't necessarily understand, what's the best way to get in touch?
Sarah, Sara, at 411.io, or on LinkedIn via our company page. We get a lot of messages on there too, and I'm always attached to my LinkedIn. I'll never miss it.
Got it. And for 411, is it all spelled out
It
FourOneOne.io?
is, yes.
Okay, perfect. Didn't want to send somebody to information because that'd be crazy. All right, Sarah Denman, thank you so much for being guest on the show. Appreciate you. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Mike.